Welcome to KBOO, Jill Gentile.
Hi there, Jen.
Well, it's good to have you here. Jill Gentile is on the faculty of the NYU postdoctoral program in psychotherapy and psychoanalysis and author with Michael McCrone of Feminine Law, Freud, Free Speech, and the Voice of Desire, and has written recently about Trump and social pathology. Well, Jill, this is President's Day, so let's talk about the president. Psychoanalysis focuses on infantile conflicts, unconscious fantasies and defenses, all of which seem pretty applicable to this guy who seems to display so much of the infantile side of power. But as a feminist and psychoanalyst, you have a different take on what is disturbing about Trump. So let's start by talking a bit about how we might make use of psychoanalysis to explain political discourse, including some of what you've taken up in your recent work.
Sure. I mean, that's a really broad question because I think psychoanalysis offers a lens that the public can really benefit from hearing. We work all the time with ideas of motivation and unconscious fantasy, and these operated in this campaign in Trump's campaign and in his presidency in ways that continue to elude conventional political analysis. When we think about Trump's appeal, a lot of analyses have explored the economic factors, the racial factors, the fear of losing one's place amongst white Americans. And a lot of these analyses have kind of revealed that race was a decisive factor. And it was Trump's uncanny wisdom, we might say, to exploit the race card, to explicitly name what remained unnamed that was percolating beneath the surface. And he did this in this way that, from a psychoanalytic perspective, was quite brilliant. He tied that to what he understood on an apparently deep level to be the vulnerability among men, especially, to feeling disenfranchised and culturally marginalized, and the threats in the culture as we shift towards a multicultural society, to feeling marginalized and to having white male supremacy threatened. And so not only did we see him develop this kind of cult of white strong men by who he brought into his cabinet and who he formed alliances with, but he overtly derided black and brown immigrants, citizens, and degraded others, and appealed to this fantasy of supremacy, right, of omnipotence, of not needing to concede to laws, to what we conventionally and amongst the liberal elite regard as the ethical imperatives of inclusivity, equality, civil discourse in our society. So he took advantage of this vulnerability, this fear of losing one's place that authors like J.D. Vance and Arlie Hochschild have revealed was so widely featured in the subjective narratives that they documented.
So, one way I think the most commonly accessible way of understanding the dynamics of Trump's appeal is through this idea of displacement and projection, that the disturbing aspect of one's world become projected onto the outside, and then the leader becomes the border guard, the one who protects the public from threats from without. And that has a long history of building the more anxiety people feel, often the more vulnerable they are to building rigid walls and borders, both concretely real and imagined. But you've described something that is, on one level, it's very much on the surface how this is a different kind of patriarch than we've had in the past, in that he's what you might call a very regressed character. He seems out of control. It's a lot about his eating and his habits that don't display discipline. And so he's not, in a way, a very reassuring patriarch in the old school fashion. There's something so notably undisciplined about him. So what's your take on this particular appeal to power? Because on one level, there's so much on display that belies the traditional image of the reassuring patriarch with which men can identify and derive some secondary power.
Yeah, it's a really interesting question. Some would say that the appeal of Trump or the election of Trump is very much tied into the narcissistic injuries of the public at large, that absent a space in this era of heightened polarizations, we see this kind of narrowing of possibility. And so in a very polarized world, there's none of the natural mechanisms for gaining a foothold in the world at large, a sense of power in the world, a feeling that one matters to the world, are available. What psychoanalysis shows is that when we narrow these gaps, when we elude or bypass a mediating space, which I'd like to refer to as a feminine space, but I'm sure we'll get to that, that we tend to organize identity in terms of a sort of a sense of identity, a loyalty to belonging based on a fierce attachment to a kind of reified and even caricatured sense of identity. And on the other hand, on the other side of that, we see a tendency towards simmering resentments and spite and vengeful fantasy, because there's no, again, if it's a human imperative to kind of claim a sense of value and mattering and inclusive belonging in society, when we don't have a space for that, we reduce ourselves to this fear of omnipotence.
So you see him as, in that sense, and his discourse as a symptom of a larger collapse of shared political space for working through problems, although there is, I suppose, always a potential in responding to what's going on now to romanticize an earlier era of so-called civil discourse when there have been so many people of color excluded, women excluded, who are now active and mobilized. So it's there are these paradoxes attached to what's going on now, as you have social movements mobilized and the Black Lives Matter movement, the Me Too movement. How do you, in your work, I know you have pursued an interesting line of argument in connecting some of the racism, I mean the blatant racism in his campaign questioning Obama's birth, and the anxiety that runs through a lot of his attacks on women, and how the sexism and racism operating in his political discourse and his appeal, particularly to white men, have kind of go hand in hand. Can you say a bit about that? It may take more than a bit, but can you speak to that?
Well, I think this is, again, part of his uncanny brilliance and quite disturbing to most of us, because not only has Trump portrayed himself as above the law and unaccountable to the law or unaccountable to reality, he does so by exploiting what psychoanalysts might regard as our foundational fantasies from childhood. So children, let's go back to Freud for a moment. According to Freud, were preoccupied with some basic questions, which I think ran subtextually throughout the presidential campaign and eluded most analyses. So the child, and I think the public at large during this campaign, were, because of Trump's positing his birtherism charge against Obama, were preoccupied with this question of where did Obama come from and to what clan did he belong. They also would become preoccupied, because of Trump's rhetoric, with the deeply flawed, crooked Hillary, versus the so big, so great, trumped up Donald. Now, these are questions of anatomical difference that are part and parcel of any analytic inquiry. And they cast, aided and abetted by Trump's narrative, the world as one of where people either win or lose. There's one winner among a field of losers. It's not a place that's inclusive where everybody has a piece of the pie. So we would become preoccupied with these, and this again operated unconsciously throughout the campaign. What did Trump have? We knew it was big and awesome, supposedly. And what was Hillary missing? Her inaccessible, right, her mind, her capacious contours were less easy to access or define, and ultimately became treated as degraded and inferior, as so often is the case for women in the public sphere. But we began to see how these gaps between these caricatured elements rooted in physical anatomy for Freud became operated in the public realm, in the public imagination, and bifurcated, right, the what was wrong with Hillary, the question of what Hillary was missing, that word flawed that came to be definitive of Hillary versus what the size that Trump wanted to project that he owned.
You've made, and we have to close in a moment, but you've made this point that much of what he circles around is the anxiety about our dependency on women, or perhaps our dependency even on Mother Africa, if you want to go there, that we all are descendants of some other place, of immigrants, and the disavowal of so many of the dependencies that we share. And so circles around that problem.
So we see that the female body operated in this question about anatomy throughout the campaign, that although that from the get-go with Trump's bringing in the birtherist narrative, although mostly that's been analyzed in terms of race, we hear in the word itself, birth, the link to the unspoken female body, to the female vagina, to what gives birth, the awesome power of the feminine. And psychoanalysts have, yes, had a great deal to say about the power of the female body, and also how the female body becomes degraded and a source of tremendous fear.
Yeah, but, and it's both real, as in masculine and patriarchal power, but also, as you point out, becomes a domain of a fantasy and fear. So, well, Jill Gentile, it's time to close for today, but we will post on our website a link to your book and a recent article where people can read more about this, I think, really important line of critical analysis you present that goes beyond just diagnosing Trump in the usual ways it's become a parlor game. So thank you so much for being with us today. This is Jan Hocken talking with Jill Gentile about Trump and pathology on President's Day.
Thank you so much, Jan.